Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another broadcast of Minority Business Radio, a brand new show that features long-form interviews with innovative entrepreneurs and successful minority leaders. And I'm your host, Kumbi Tinoye. Very, very excited about today's show. So let's get started and introduce our guests. It's my distinct pleasure to introduce our first guest, James Bronner, Director of Technology at Bronner Bros, a family-owned multi-billion dollar hair and beauty firm. We've also got here Charlie Whitfield, founder and CEO of Witty Apps. And last but not least, we have Ade Kunle Oyedele, a seasoned IT professional and founder of an innovative mobile app called Mixel. So thank you, everyone, for coming in today. We really appreciate your time. And as I say, we're very excited about today's show. So I'm going to kick off now with James. Hi, James. Hi,
hello.
How are you?
Great, doing great. Glad to be on with you today, Kobe.
Wonderful. So, well, for those of listeners that don't know, James is part of a phenomenal empire, family empire called Bronner Bros, which is... it's a company that produces beauty and hair products. It's actually been, I think next year's the 70th anniversary, and it's a multi-million dollar business. So James, first of all, I just want to ask you really a little bit about the black hair and beauty business, which, as we said, is actually a multi-billion dollar industry. What's so distinct about this industry? Because this is huge. I mean, for listeners that don't know, this is a huge industry. Just tell us a little bit about the industry.
Okay, we used to define the industry by racial groups, but there's so much diversity now and so many mixing of races that we really had to move to defining it more by hair textures. Mm-hmm. So now we consider it anybody with textured hair as part of that group. And the scope has really in media been underestimated, that when you add in weaves and tools and all of the accessories to hair products and nails and makeup, it's really almost $500 billion. So it's
wow.
Huge.
It's amazing.
And impact. And the other thing that research has shown that has caused more focus to the multicultural is they found that African Americans spend 9 times more than general market consumers in this space.
So absolutely.
It's really put a lot of focus on growing the multicultural aspects.
Yeah, I think I read somewhere that African-American women make up, and you may be able to correct me, but make up about 6% of the population. But I think they spend about 30% on hair products. So it's kind of like huge.
It's
amazing. It really is. So obviously you're in a multicultural market. When we talk about manufacturing and marketing, is there anything that sort of differentiates, you know, working in a niche market compared to sort of mainstream markets? So, you know, what do multicultural consumers look for?
Well, the hair texture makes them look for different products. So with general market hair, they don't want as much oil in their products because it'll weigh the hair down, and they shampoo more. So this multicultural market, they will look for things that'll add moisture, a little more oil, and even some grease-based. And the shampoos are a little different with conditioning. So there are some differences in what they look for. And really, we're concerned with more hair growth and healthy hair now in multicultural. So there are some buzzwords that are different between those two markets.
Tell us some of the buzzwords.
A lot of it is more ingredient-based now, we find. So like coconut oil and coconut products and scents are hot now. So it depends on what's being marketed and what goes on social media. When people hear about a certain ingredient, we find that it really drives an entire segment. Olive was big not long ago. So you'll see multiple companies that'll begin to put these ingredients in the product and have it on the labeling. So it really switches each year.
Okay. Yes. So I know that Bronner Bros is a family-owned business, and I think I'm right in saying it was actually established in 1947, which is amazing. That's longevity. And I know that your father, Nathaniel, was, you know, what spearheaded the business. What did you learn? Because I think I'm right in saying you're one of six brothers.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, one of six brothers, and all of you, you know, involved in the business and all have other projects, you know, all, you're all sort of entrepreneurs. So what did you learn about business from your father?
Everything.
Give our listeners some tips.
He really brought us up as children in an entrepreneurial environment. We were not forced to work as part of the business, but all of our first businesses was a paper route. So we started at 5 years old, and from that, we learned to go out and market our products. It was the Atlanta Daily World paper. We learned how to collect from customers and good customer service. We learned the work ethic of getting up before school and going out and throwing papers. He never gave any of us an allowance. So one of the tips I would give as far as children, and the reason we're so many of us are entrepreneurs today, we had to earn everything. So we didn't get an allowance. My classmates a lot of times thought I was being driven to school in a limousine and had servants at home. They didn't realize I was working harder than any of them. So I actually had to walk to elementary and middle school. So he really brought us up tough, and we really learned business from a young age with that paper route.
Interesting. And I'm going to ask you another interesting question. What are the pros and cons of being involved in a family business? You may want to talk about the pros first. I don't know if there's any, there may be no cons, but I mean, you know, obviously a family business, you know, working with blood.
Yes.
I mean, what's so distinct about that?
One of the pros is can be trustworthiness. If you have a trustworthy family member that you've known for 15, 20 years, you really know this person inside and out, and you can see their character from outside of the business, from prior family relationships. And you've been able to know them over time to see their diligence in school and with other jobs. So that's one. And they typically will, if they have the right spirit, it'll be more than just a paycheck. So it's a family matter, that somebody that you're with at Thanksgiving and holidays, you're going to church with. So it's a deeper commitment and relationship. Mm-hmm. Now, the con is actually related as well, because they're a family member. If they're not doing a great job, it's hard to fire them a lot of times.
Very hard.
Tearing up that relationship.
You see them every day.
and we know a lot of stories of the other thing is there's a sense of privilege. So we've had known family members in businesses that have been stealing, and they say, well, this, you know, that's my brother, that's my sister, so it's all right, that's my cousin. People cannot have a sense of business principles with that family relationship. So that is the biggest con we've seen. So you have to be careful to make sure to choose only family members who exhibit great business qualities, not just because they're a family member. Same thing can go for hiring friends. So those same standards, that if you didn't know this person, with everything you know about them, would you still hire them? That's kind of how we look at that.
Okay. I know that your faith and family are very important to you. How do you balance those three areas, faith, family, and business? Because I think you're a father of how many?
Only seven, that's all.
A father of seven. So that's, you know, so how do you balance that? Having, you know, a big family, a large family, and obviously being an entrepreneur, successful entrepreneur, a multi-million dollar business.
I think we're able to successfully balance it because balance was taught to us. It wasn't something that you could do haphazardly. So it was put as a priority. And my father, his top principles, if you ask all of his children, you know, what was the top principles your father taught you? They'll all tell you God first, family second, and business third. So it was a priority system that he gave us. And he didn't just give it to us in words, but we saw it demonstrated. Mm-hmm. So we saw him, I mean, even though he was running this multi-million dollar business and working in the church and the community, he spent more time with us than we wanted him to spend with us. We wanted a break from that. He spent so much time with
that's
us.
That's wonderful.
So, and there's no substitute for that. There's no easy way to do that. So we saw it demonstrated, so it became natural for us. That same priority system was put in us, and we just make time for those elements in that order and keep our priorities fixed.
Well, I love that order that you've said, because I know that if your personal life is not in order, that can obviously often impact your professional and business life. So that's a great, did you say God first, God, family, and then business?
Yes.
Wonderful. And so what about you, Ade or Charlie? Do you have any, I mean, how do you balance, you know, your personal life and your professional life, or is it just, you know, how do you balance?
Well, I think for me, obviously, I'm a father of two boys, 7 and 5. And, you know, I have a very amazing wife, and, you know, she helps a lot as far as the balance is concerned. Yeah, because sometimes I'm a little bit too into what I'm doing as far as, you know, always working. And sometimes we would go to karate lessons, and I was still seeing myself, you know, checking my emails and going to the car to make phone calls, you know. But I think ultimately, you know, we do know when there are times when you have to put all that aside and focus more on the family, and the times when the family also understands that, you know, daddy has to work. You know, I think it's all about, you know, just making sure everybody's on the same page as to what we're trying to do.
Okay, so let's really talk now about your legendary Bronner International Beauty Shows, which are amazing. I've actually been to those shows twice and covered it as a journalist. So just tell, for listeners that don't know about this, and you should know if you don't know, but if you don't know about the Bronner International Beauty Show, just tell listeners, you know, what this is all about.
Well, first of all, we have over 30,000 attendees that come to the city of Atlanta, Georgia, twice a year, once in February and the other is in August. And it's an awesome event. We describe it as something like a family reunion for those in the beauty industry. So it's the time of year where they all can come and be in one place, kind of fellowship together. They learn. We have over 100 classes. We have over 300 companies there that people can buy products at a discount. There are all type of demonstrations. And then we have entertainment. So we don't want to just educate them and allow them to get great deals, because they work all year long and people need a break. So a lot of people, it's a vacation for them as well, and they'll bring a spouse or a friend. So we have entertainment in the evenings for them with fashion shows and comedy shows and hair battles and these type of things.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I have been, and it's phenomenal. And just, I mean, obviously I've been and I've, you know, seen how amazing it is. Obviously, it wasn't like that in 1947. Those crazy hairstyles that I witnessed. I mean, one of the things I want to ask you is, obviously, your company, you know, your family business has been successful. That this is about longevity.
Yes.
Why do you think, you know, since 1947 to now, we're coming up to the 70th anniversary, why do you think Bronner Bros has been so successful?
I would say, back to the earlier question, that priority system, because we've kept their priorities in place. Our faith has given us favor and allowed us to have certain values. Mm-hmm. The family, many of our competitors, they didn't go out of business because their products didn't do well mm-hmm. enough. They had divorces and family splits, mm-hmm. and they had to sell the company just to divvy up the shares. So,
Absolutely. So
that family has helped us. And also, each of my brothers had an expertise in school, and we use our talents to really benefit the business in our area of strength. So it really strengthened the entire business. So the family actually helped the business. So I would say that those three principles, as well as adjusting to the trends and the times. So a lot of companies, if you were only still making curl products, now you're out of business. So we had to see the trends and see what was coming and prepare for it. So I think those are the.
And when you say see the trends, I mean, how do you spot a new trend? You know, what's coming up, what people are into? Do you do focus groups, or just keep your head down and sort of see what's happening on the streets? How do you know, what you should be doing next year in 5 years' time?
Well, we do a lot of different methods. First of all, we're blessed to have the beauty show where a lot of the trends are actually set. So in the last year, we had a trend release. So we not only want to follow the trends, we want to be the place where you come to see the trends.
Yes.
So we bring in top stylists. So in our trend release, our last one, we had Oprah Winfrey stylists, Halle Berry stylists, Michelle Obama stylists, Beyonce stylists, Mary J. Blige. So we bring in all of these people to show the trends that's going on. They're in Hollywood and all of the places where things are happening. So they bring that innovation and they show it. We also bring in researchers that give us the latest data. We also look at our retailers and look at the product trends, and that shows us the shiftings. Social media shows us a lot of the trends on what people are talking about. So there are a lot of different avenues that we collectively look at.
Okay, that's wonderful. So let's just shift a little bit. I know, and I think this is amazing because technology is I'm very into technology. I know that you're a computer engineering graduate of Georgia Tech, which
is
phenomenal.
Correct.
How did you, or do you use any of that, your sort of technological experience or know-how? Do you implement that into the business in any way?
A whole lot. So
I think
first of all, it helped with my mindset. Being an engineer, we were used to seeing problems, analyzing the problem, and coming up with fixes for those problems. So when I took over the beauty show, I didn't really change my mindset from computer and engineering problems. So I did a massive survey of all the attendees and the companies and saw what the problems were, what they wanted to see, and the things that they liked. So I did a massive data study, and I began to make decisions off of that data as an engineer. And then I incorporated a lot of technology in with our we revamped the entire registration process, and I got tickets for sale online, things like that. And that is one of our top ways of selling tickets.
Yes.
So it really has helped a tremendous amount. It helped with social media, with that being technologically based. And we reached out, and we have partnerships this show with Snapchat, which will make us a live event. And that goes to 20 million people in that live event section. So it'll be all over the world. People will be exposed to the show that didn't know about it before. So those are some of the things that technology has really helped with.
Wonderful. And I know, just sort of rounding up, it's the 70th anniversary is coming up, isn't it? I think that's next
correct.
Year, which is,
yes, in,
you know,
February,
an amazing milestone. Have you got any special events around? Is anything different happening next year?
Yes, because the media is really building up. And even this summer, we're going to be on three magazine covers at one time on the newsstand.
Wow.
So the media and press, it's really picking up, and we really are in the midst of planning special things. And kind of my vision is to do the best of all time. So, for instance, our hair battle that we've been doing for many years, I want to go back through history, look at all of the contests, and get the top four presenters of all time. So look at all the winners, get the ones who had the most tremendous presentation, and put them against each other and see who's the best hair battlers of all time.
Okay.
Same thing with fashion show and comedy, kind of bringing the best of all times and making that the anniversary celebration with that.
Okay, thank you so much. So for listeners that don't actually know, can you tell them where to get hold of you, your website, a URL or your email? Or, you know, how do people get in contact with Bronner Bros?
Everything is at bronnerbros.com. That's BRONNERBROS.com. So you can register there, see everything about the company's history, the products, as well as the show.
Okay, thank you so much. We really appreciate your time. So Charlie, how are you, Charlie?
Thank you. I'm very well, and I hope that you are.
Yes, I am. Thank you. So as I said earlier, you're the founder and CEO of Witty Apps.
Yes, Witty Apps.
Witty Apps. So just so tell listeners about your company and what you do.
Witty Apps is a software engineering and technology integration company. And what we do is we go out to a lot of the enterprise companies and even the federal space, and we help companies to be creative, innovative, and basically do things in a more efficient manner. You know, digital and technology is so huge now. As you notice, everybody's smartphone has become a part of their neck and hands, especially the young people.
Yes.
And so even with a lot of businesses in the B2E side, the business to employees, we found methods and ways to help that business to even be more effective and more efficient. Being a woman-owned small business, we are certified to do business with the government. And being that and having that in the community, we try to partner with other companies so that we can go in as a team, because, you know, there's strength in numbers. And when you have strength in numbers, you can do so many wonderful things. I'm also a service-disabled vet. Just recently, we have our 8A certification. For people who don't know what that is, that's a huge certification in the government that will allow us to do sole source and set-aside contracts. So that type of commodity, if I can say, in the tech industry with the woman-owned business, we are opening doors for not only for our company. We've been around for about 4 years. Emerging technology company. I love it. And I started the company with my better half. Well, soon to be better half. Yeah, he doesn't know it yet, but he's been an intricate part in our growth. He is like the wind beneath my wings. You know, the old saying about if there's a successful man, there's usually a woman, a strength of a woman behind him. I can say the same for a successful woman. Defining success for us is the ability to help someone to do something with their lives. When I talk about helping someone, we look at the younger generation, millennials, and veterans who want to get into the IT space. Mm. There are two types of codes. You have the man-made, that's usually built on frameworks, and then you have the computer-generated platforms. We found that if we can train someone on a platform, then they can have a career path going to the man-made code with all the different programming languages. Mm-hmm. Then we can offer them an opportunity to change their lives. Mm. One of the biggest certifications we have that helps us in the space of the government is the hub zone, historically underutilized business zones.
Wow.
In that space, of course, we can do set-asides, but not only that, 35% of our employee base has to be people from the hub zone. Mm-hmm. And I love that because it offers us the opportunity to let young people who look like me, mm-hmm. I'm a beautiful Black woman, that just go out and, you know what? I don't normally say that. And I've never said that in my
what
life.
What is wrong with that?
It's okay.
That's fine. But we agree. Yeah,
there aren't a lot of us out there.
In the
numbers are
space.
so unfair. Mm-hmm. So I go to places where I can speak to young women or young men that look like me, mm-hmm. or even those who don't look like me, but they're minorities. Mm-hmm. We went to Georgia Gwinnett College not long ago. Mm-hmm. 30 women in a Java boot camp. Java is one of the best programming languages out here. Mm-hmm. And they were all in a boot camp for 3 days. So I was supposed to be their inspirational speaker. Yeah. Well, I had no idea that so many of them had their own F-E-A-R-S. Mm-hmm. Fears.
Yeah.
We use that acronym sometimes to say forgetting that everything is all right. Mm-hmm. And they had fears just being a woman in technology. Mm-hmm. Or for me, when I first started my business, and I'm not racist whatsoever. Okay. I thought that the white American race would not purchase for me because I was a Black woman. Mm-hmm. Boy, was I wrong. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't the case. And those are things that I think oppression and other things that people struggle with mm-hmm. growing up in America have to contend with. And then here we are finding that, oh no, you like my product? I'm good at what I do? Mm-hmm. Oh yes, I am. I was challenged, mm-hmm. very much challenged, not just because I'm a woman, but also because I'm a Black woman. People would meet me and ask me, you code? You? You're the best looking nerd I'd ever seen. Or you don't look like a geek. You know, things of this nature. And they mm-hmm. questioned my abilities. Mm-hmm. And then I got smart and I said, well, do you code? Do you know anything about programming languages? Mm-hmm. Do you know what an end string is?
Yeah.
You know, so I really try to get into that. But mm-hmm. for me, and what we're doing at Witty Apps, woman-owned company, entrepreneur, emerging small business, we are looking to take it to the next level. Mm-hmm. And that's changing generational wealth.
Okay.
I see generational wealth as changing the mindset, because the mind in itself can be the biggest enemy that we have. So I can go on, you know.
No, and I'm really enjoying what you're saying. I just want to circle back because I'm actually interested in this. I can see from looking at your company, you've got all these certifications mm-hmm. and also your certified women-owned business. Mm-hmm. What are the benefits? And this is something I'm really curious about, so I'm picking your brains. What are the benefits of being certified?
That's a great question. One of the benefits to this is that, you know, women are considered to be disadvantaged in mm-hmm. the economy because of we make 85 cents to the dollar and the men make the dollar.
Okay.
So that's one thing that happens with us. One of the advantages to having these certifications is that there are contracts and their businesses that are set aside mm-hmm. to business just with this particular group of people.
Yes.
Whether it's a woman, a minority, or disadvantaged business, mm-hmm. businesses have set this aside. One of the cool things that's going on now, especially in the government, the government is saying to the large businesses who've gotten all of the contracts, hey guys, check this out. If you don't bring a small business in to do some of the work as a subcontractor or prime, you'll no longer be allowed to do any of the big contracts.
Okay. Is this a grueling process?
No, it isn't.
Oh.
You see, people pay a lot of money to get these certifications done mm-hmm. by someone else.
Okay.
I did them myself.
Okay,
because
so me and you're going to talk afterwards.
Yes, no, seriously, you can do them yourself. If you have a brain and you're smart, you can do them yourself, I think.
Okay.
I thought I was smart enough to start my own business, so I did. Mm-hmm. And it has been amazing.
Mm.
Where I get my strength is from the Spirit of God. Okay. You know, my spiritual connection, mm-hmm. that intimate relationship comes from prayer and meditation. Okay. It is amazing. simply amazing how much I'm loved.
So your Atlanta-based firm, how big is it? I mean, and you said, what, you're 4 years old?
Yes, yeah. We're about four and a half going into
five. So do you have, I mean, how big is the team? Is it a small team?
Most of my team are contractors, 1099ers. And there's like four people. I have to count them. You know? And really, most of them are my advisors, business advisors. And they take such good care of me, really. Mm-hmm. I have a business coach. And I have a brand manager and I have a CTO. These are all men. Mm-hmm. But see, the key is I'm learning from the men so that I can teach the women so that the women can take over.
Okay. So I'm always interested in, you talked about coaches, and for me, that makes me think about mentorship. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's think about our listeners, maybe someone who's just starting off as an entrepreneur. What advice would you give someone who is looking for a coach or a mentor? How do you approach that?
Well, you know, coaches and mentors come in all shapes and sizes. Mm. That coach or that mentor could be that person that you're sitting down having coffee with.
Okay.
Someone that you admire or someone that you know has done well in business, call them up and tell them, you know, I really admire you, Mr. Broner. I would like to know more about what you do and how we can probably do some things together.
Okay.
Or, Mr. Ade, I love what you're doing. You know, I'm interested in what you're doing. Please, can we sit down and let me buy you a cup of coffee?
Mm.
You can get so much in a cup of coffee that you can get from anywhere. So if you see someone out there that you admire or like what they're doing, ask them. So, you have to ask for help.
So why would someone give up their time? Do you need to sort of say, I'm going to offer something in return? Or do people just...
Oh, that's an excellent question. I'm glad you asked that, because I thought that too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people want money and people want things. But one of the most important things that I've learned is that people who have, and I think it says in place that if those who've been given a lot is expected, but people who have success, they don't mind. They want to help. Mm-hmm. I mean, seriously, people who have a whole lot of money, I'm not kidding you. They want to help somebody else succeed. Mm. And don't think that it's not true.
Mm.
This country was built on entrepreneurship and people helping people. So ask. A closed mouth doesn't get fed.
That's very true. So what's been your biggest challenge in starting and actually growing your business?
I think my biggest challenge has been believing in myself.
Okay.
You know, sure, we struggle with finances. Sure, we need a mentor. But I think the biggest challenge is believing that I can do anything. And coming up from South Georgia, a young girl with nine children in the family, I'm number four, we often had struggles. And they really go on into your psychic, I think, later on in life. And then growing up in the
late 60s, early 70s.
There was a lot going on in America that said that you can't do, you know, because of who you are. But I think that's been the biggest challenge. But once we get over that, for example, there's a good book called The E-Myth, Revisited by Michael Gerber.
Okay.
It talks a lot about the technician, the manager, and the entrepreneur. And it gives you some pointers on how you can better yourself. So I like to read things that would help me to better myself. And in doing so, I've become successful.
Okay. So you're saying shifting your mindset.
Shifting your mindset.
Okay.
Believing that you are important, that your purpose here in this world is bigger than anything you can fathom, anything, whomever you are. I don't care what color your skin is, how big or small you are, male or female. You know, our purpose here is amazing. And understanding and believing that is really the key, I think.
Okay, that's very, very true. And your state of mind is very, very important. So I know that you're very passionate about the lack of diversity in the technology industry, and you've kind of touched on that even as you were speaking. Are you working on any programs to empower women or minorities interested in tech?
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yes, I am.
Okay.
Our company is offering young people or women or veterans to literally come on board and learn more about platform-based coding.
Okay.
Like I said earlier, it would give them a lot of the acumen that they need, the actual, I was looking for a good word to say that was smart, but it wouldn't come out. But it gives people a little bit of faith that they can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Technology intimidates people. engineering, people don't realize that they do a lot of engineering in their brain anyway. They have a problem and they try to figure out logic. Algebra is just logic, and you need that, especially if you're trying to determine if that guy's best for me or that guy's best for me, X and Y equals Z type thing. But I think that what we are doing in this space, training people on a platform about technology and mobile technology and giving them a few tools to help them to better their lives, I think that would truly do it. So two-year universities, colleges, high schools, we look for interns and look for people who want to. You have to want to.
Yeah.
You have to really want to do that because it takes time to sit in a room and code.
Absolutely, yeah. Do you think anyone can code, or do you think anyone can code, or do you think you need to have a certain, I know, logical type of...
That's you said it, logic.
Yeah.
Business logic. It's basically all you really need to focus on, business logic. Because if you focus on business logic, the programming, and it becomes fun to try to figure something out and watch it work and see the outcome of your own creation.
Yeah. Absolutely. So you're 4 years old. What's next? What's your big step? You said that you want to take it to the next level. So what's the next level for you?
You know, we are so blessed. And I say it like that, not just fortunate, but we're blessed in that we have partnered with people, larger companies who have looked at us and said, you know what? You guys are good. And the next level for us is doing business with the federal government. And that's what we're doing now. We have a direct award. We're going after RFPs. We have a mentor and a mentor-protege program. And also, the next level, of course, is to bring in those people that look like me. And some of them that look like me are blonde hair and blue eyes, honestly, seriously. But people who want something different, something new, something different. So the next level for us is trying to make that million by the end of the year.
Wow.
And in doing that, bringing people on board who want to learn and do something different. Because, you know, the next step is robotics, which is artificial intelligence. And you need software. Software programming makes those things. It's like programming makes hardware work, right? So software to hardware. Okay. Hardware is the robotics. So the software is going to need to be done in order to create artificial intelligence.
Okay. So what advice would you give minority women interested, or any minority group actually interested in getting into technology, getting into the tech ecosystem?
You know, one of the things I started doing was getting all of the newsletters and things that come out over the line, like Flipboard and TechCrunch, just to see what was going on. What's the latest? What's going on out there?
Yeah.
And really talk to people who are in the industry and find out what it is, what's coming up next. Keep your eyes open and then just go for it.
Thank you so much. So tell our listeners how they can find out about your company and get hold of you.
Okay, Whitty Apps is WHITTYAPPS.com. Info at Whitty Apps is our email address. Or give us a call on our business line, 404-937-4058. And also for some of the business owners, we do a 30-minute free consultation. And that's 30 minutes.
Not 35. Thank you so much. We really appreciate your time.
Much.
Thank you. So, Ade, let's I, fellow Nigerian, so you know I'm not going to call you Ade Kunle. Ade.
Yeah, you know, sometimes I try to pronounce it with that accent, right?
Ade.
It's Ade Kunle.
Ade Kunle. Ayodele.
That's my full name. Family call me Kunle, but friends call me Ade. So, yeah, you know, Ade works.
Right, so tell us, I know that you have this amazing, amazing app, and you know that I love what you do. So just tell people a little bit about your app.
Sure. So it's called Mixle, M-I-X-L-E. It's derived from the word mix and mingle. You know, I try to tell the story how everything all came to be. Last year, I walked into a local lounge in Atlanta. I sat by the bar, ordered a drink, and I just found that I was just, you know, playing with my phone right now. I looked around me and realized pretty much everybody were doing the same thing. They ordered a drink, and from time to time, like you said, Charlie, we connected to our phones, right? They kept on looking on their phones. I mean, now fast forward an hour after, people started to interact. So I'm like, wow, okay. What happened in the last hour that made people to interact? Two things came to my mind. The first was either liquid courage kicked in and people had the nerves to say hi, or the lounge became a bit crowded. That was much easier to reach out to the person next to you and say hi. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much how Mixer was fun. Mm-hmm. How can we instantly connect people nearby who share similar thoughts, interests, mm-hmm. or goals for instant in-person meetup? And mm-hmm. that's what Mixer actually does.
Okay, it's wonderful. And I'm going to ask you this question. Sure. And I think I may sort of throw you, but I want to ask it because I'm always interested in this. I'm going to throw you. I know that I know that Mixel has sort of rebranded itself
Correct.
Recently, and it was actually a different name
Correct.
and had a different logo. Why did you change? I mean, you know, what was the process? Why did you think that you needed a different, you know, to rebrand?
Okay. Initially, it was called Thoddy, Thoddy, which was, again, you know, based on thoughts. Mm. Plus body. It was a combination of the word thoughts plus that plus body.
Yeah.
Obviously, we went into the market and quickly realized that a segment of the market found it a bit difficult to understand the intent of the app. And pretty much that was what fed into the thought process of rebranding. So we brought in a brand consultant and quickly realized, okay, Mixer was a much better name for what we're trying to do and the people we're trying to reach out to.
And I really think that's true because I know what your last logo and your name, and I think Mixel is phenomenal, and I love that the new logo. And so, James, I'm going to actually swing this over to you because I think branding is extremely important in any kind of company. What are your thoughts about that? What makes a successful brand? Is it the name? Is it the logo? Is it, I don't know, what makes a successful brand? Because you are working with a successful brand. I mean,
I would say it has to connect with the person. That can be the name or the logo or the campaign around it. Mm-hmm. So it has to connect. And I think with us, the shows have helped our products connect with people because when they hear Bronner Brothers, they think about those hairstyles and all of the creativity. So when they go to the chef and see it, they all of that comes back to their mind about that creativity.
Do you think it's important then for brands to actually do something that engages consumers, like live shows? You know, do you think that's quite important in terms of people seeing the face behind the brand? Do you think that's important?
Or even you can do a lot of that online now. So it's a lot more expensive to do it with a live gathering. But there are things you can do online to create that experience still of that community getting together.
Okay. And that's true. Social media now is it's so important with any kind of business. So going back to Mixel, so who are your target market?
So right now we're reaching out to event organizers, right?
Okay, James. You know, we've got a connection here today.
It's because, you know, in the last few years, I've actually gone to lots of networking events, right? But look at it this way. How do people network today? Mm-hmm. You know, you have to approach multiple people with the hope that you connect with the right person. Mm-hmm. That means you walk to person A and say, my name is Ade. What do you do? What do you do? You know, okay. And then you move on to the next person and the next person and the next person. So we say, wow, okay, there's a better way of actually doing that. And that's what Mixel tries to solve. So the way it works is you download the Mixel app and then you check in into an event location or a place and select your thoughts. And that was the original idea behind Thoddy, right? Mm-hmm. So you're selecting your thought or interest and saying, you know what? I'm here looking for an hairstylist, right? And Mixel instantly connects you with an hairstylist who is also there in the room, right? So rather than you having to approach 20, 50, 100 people, hopefully to get one hairstylist, you can actually instantly connect with that hairstylist right there. Using the Mixel app.
See, James, this is a phenomenal. You know, it's coming up in August. This is a great connection. This is new technology at the beauty show. This is amazing. And I know that you've also done. You've collaborated with Atlanta Tech Village, which, you know,
Correct.
We'll talk about Atlanta Tech Village. Tell our listeners what you've done with Tech Village.
So typically, there's this monthly event. It's an Atlanta Startup Village every last Monday of the month. I think the next one is coming up shortly. So again, like any networking event where people's aim is to connect with the right people.
Yes.
You know, so our aim was to say, hey, we have this amazing app called Mixel that can actually help people benefit by, you know, connecting with the right person, you know, and that's pretty much what that's about. So people come to Atlanta Tech Village, they have the Mixel app, they're checking into Atlanta Tech Village, and then we have a list of customized thoughts. So the good thing about the technology is depending on where you're checking into, You know, those thought, interest, or goals is more specific to that location. So if you were to check in into a place of worship, you see things relating to, okay, let's pray together, let's sing, let's meet after church service. Or if you were to check in into a networking event, you would see something like, let's exchange business cards, things of that nature. So now when people do come to Atlanta Tech Village, all they need to do is just check in into ATV. They'll see a list of thoughts such as looking for a co-founder, looking for a developer or a social media consultant.
Or investor.
Or investor. There you go. And we get that a lot, by the way. And then they can just instantly see that there's one in the room, you know, text chat back and forth and say, hey, let's meet up and instantly make that connection.
I'm sure we've spoken about your app before. I really think it's just a phenomenal phenomenal idea. But let's talk about money. Because I always like to talk about money, especially with startups. How do you generate revenue?
Well, we have three main revenue streams. The first is through licensing, where we license our technology to event planners, you know, sporting arenas, campuses. The second would be through ads, where, you know, as people do check in, and the good thing about our technology is, you know, we actually serve in-moment ads. So for instance, if you were to check in and say, I want to grab a drink, right, we could actually serve you an ad that is more specific to what you're thinking of doing, right? So I'm looking to, you know, connect with an hairstylist, just a piggy bank on the show. We can actually then serve ads based on exactly what you're thinking of doing. Oh, so, you know, ads is obviously one of our key revenue sources. The other would be subscription. That's something that we see further down the line. But as far as today, it's licensing and ads.
So I have no idea, and you may even come in on this, Charlie, you know, what the costs are to develop an app. Is it very expensive? Did you get an investor? How does that work? Is it expensive to create an app?
You know, go ahead, Charlie.
And I'll talk to answer you.
Okay, it all depends on what you want to develop.
Exactly.
Okay, because there's so many different type apps. Because of the nature of technology, you can have a responsive website that can act like an app on your phone. I'll say that's web-based. And if you want native, or native being the Android and the iPhone type software smartphones, I got some things I want to talk about. How to help you do that. But then you have to determine what you want. So if you want a native, if your app to be native where people can go and download it on the App Store and do all of these wonderful things, it's going to cost you.
And when you say cost, what's like the starting price?
Well, everybody wants to talk about price. When we talk about technology, we talk about mainly how many hours it's going to take. So when you talk about that, think about how long it's going to take to build what you want. And the more complicated, the longer it will take. So you have developers that will start in the United States, anywhere between $70 and $150 an hour.
Okay,
if you want to go other places around the world, that could be anywhere between $20 and $50. So it all depends. So think 6,000 hours of labor is going at $20 an hour, or 6,000 hours of labor at $50 an hour. So it's basically like time is basically where you get it. Yeah,
I know.
But with rapid application development, it saves time and saves money.
And I know that some people go to places like India to actually get their apps developed. I mean, is there, and I'm sort of asking both of you, and this is really your segment, Ade. I mean, are there benefits to going to somewhere like India where obviously it will be cheaper, or is it better to do it here, homegrown? And let me ask you, because this is your segment. Yeah, well, what do you think?
I think for me, right, nothing beats face-to-face conversation, right? Having the developer right beside you.
See, Ade,
and making things work, right? But having said that, right, it's obviously much cheaper to go to the likes of Sri Lanka,
less expensive.
Russia. Less expensive, let me put it that way. Okay. you know, to go to the likes of, you know, India, Sri Lanka and get things done. Obviously, you need to look at, you know, just the time zone. I mean, India is about 9 hours, 30 minutes away. you know, and that means you have to be very, very rigid as far as your technical requirements. You need to say, hey, I need my app to do X, Y, Z. And then you have to do lots of conference calls, a whole lot of back and forth. So you need to weigh the pros and cons and say, does it make sense, you know, to pay X amount for an Indian-based resource and having to cope with all the troubles that come with it.
The communication. All
communication, time zone difference, and a whole lot more, as against finding someone that's actually local here. I think ultimately depends on, you know, how the project has been funded. If it's been self-funded, you probably want to go to India. If it's, you know, if it's obviously, if you have a series of investors or angel funding, then I would always advise getting someone that's local.
Oh, and Charlie,
you know, there's so many ways to build an app, and there's so many things that you can do. You don't have to have the full blown out project in the very beginning. There's something called a minimal viable product where you can actually have like a prototype, or you can put it on paper in a wireframe. It's like a storyboard. There's so many different phases and levels of building an app. So you show me something on a storyboard and I'm an investor and I like it. Hello, I may just invest in your app. But also with India, you find I'm nothing against our developers here because I'm smart too, but a lot of our brothers and sisters around the world, Africa and India, that's all they do.
Correct. Yes.
And they're good. If that's all you do, you're going to be good at what you do. So regardless of whether it's a U.S. citizen or not, I look at the technology. And if you really want to use somebody in another country, find a connection here in America. Find someone who can be like your middle person that can help you to do that. If you really want to do something, there's so many ways of doing it. But you can also build in phases.
Okay, yes.
And you asked for specifics. I just recently had an app built for just personal, and it was, I did do it through India. It was a site called Upwork. I'm sorry, but
did you say Upwork?
He's taking notes.
Yeah, so. Upwork.com. And it wasn't for money, so I needed it cheap because it was to help people and it wasn't to generate money. But it was, as an example, it was about $5,000. And that that was for an Android and iOS version. The app is called iVictory Habit Tracker. So with businesses and personal life, it allows you to track. My children are on this app. And it allows you to have accountability partners, and it measures the things you do on a day-to-day basis. So that's an example of what.
How was the experience?
I had to deal with the time zone, but basically I would just respond when I woke up. I had to cut my ring off in the night because I was getting messages. And I found that there was some language barrier, so I had to be more detailed in and how I had to do Excel charts, just really making it very specific and do some modeling on my end where it became clearer because they couldn't understand. We got on a Skype verbal. I explained everything very detailed verbally, and they still didn't do it. So I found that I had to put it in writing with screenshots of exactly.
That's interesting.
So it was a little more work, but it saved me
a little bit.
Half the model.
It did not save you. Not even. I can't believe he admits it.
No, it saved me money. I didn't say time.
So, going back to money, how did you get funding? I mean, are you officially launching the software? What phase are you at the moment?
So right now we've launched. We launched last year. We've done tons of networking events. So right now we're looking into spotting arenas. And obviously community managers, events, and all that good
Bruno
stuff.
Bruce,
that's what we're looking into into now, right? But as far as funding, it's been self-funded for now.
Are you interested in finding an investor, or you want to keep all that equity?
Nobody's going to say no to funding. Bring it on, 100%, right?
100% times zero is zero.
So
you're interested.
If there's any angel, seasoned investor out there, feel free to reach out to us and we can move that conversation along. It's called Mixle, M-I-X-L-E. You can go to mixleapp.com. So mixleapp.com.
And it's available on iTunes and Google Play at the moment.
Yes, you can download the app Mixle on the App Store and Google Play.
So what's your ultimate vision? What's your, I was going to say 5-year plan, but what do you hope to achieve? You want to be the next Facebook?
Who knows, right? I think for me, it's always about, connecting people, right? Being an immigrant, I've been here well over one decade. And, you come here, you have no friends, you hardly have families, obviously you're starting afresh and, trying to make connections, right? And for me, even my first startup was based about, connection. So I see Mixle being that tool, whatever form it takes, that can help enable connection. And beginning to look at the different use cases for the app where even in community apartments where people do stay, you hardly know where your neighbors are, right? You know, and being able to say, you know what, I'm here right now. I want to go to the gym. Mm. Who is here that also wants to go to the gym with me, right? Mm. Or you go to the airport where people just sit by themselves, not because they don't want to talk, but it's some really awkward just reaching out to someone and say, hey, you know, and being able to say, you know what, I have a layover, you know, who wants to go grab a drink or, you know, and when you do get to your destination, you check into your hotel and you're wondering, wow, okay, what's there to do, right? Being able to check in into the hotel and say, who wants to go to the bar? Who wants to go to the gym? Who wants to go explore the city? So for me, the whole idea behind Mixel is how can we help create that connection and not just connection, but faster connection, right? Yeah. I'm here right now. I'm looking to connect. And who's here looking to... There you go. You know, if we didn't have this conversation, you know, obviously I wouldn't know about the show and all that good stuff. Yeah. So for me, it's all about how can I help create that connected environment.
I think it's a phenomenal idea. And I love the thought of walking into a room and knowing that there are five investors there.
Exactly.
who you could have a personal connection with. I think it's an amazing idea.
Thanks,
Kobe. So finishing now, just tell our listeners how they can get hold of you, how they can get, you know, access your app.
I think it's available, like I said, on the App Store and Google Play. So they can just type in the word M-I-X-L-E, Mixel. Mm-hmm. They can also go to the website, which is mixelapp.com. Mm-hmm. They can follow us on Twitter, mixelapp.com, on Mixelapp, and obviously Snapchat and Periscope and Instagram at Mixelapp.
Okay, thank you so much to all my amazing guests today, all your sort of different perspectives. I'm sure you've, you know, listeners, it's been amazing, really. So thank you, all of you. And
thank you
so much. That's it now for the second edition of Minority Business Report. We'll see you soon. Bye.